Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Late Nights with the Midnight Bomber with Neutron Bomb and Captain B2. Pour it out thick like honey, bittersweet like molasses, seeking your proliferous journey to profit to the empathetic masses. Calling on cathartic release, expel your demons, if but for a moment increase them, then cease them. Quell their influence, let them not commit treason. Now, today's focus is on prompts from our If It's Green, It's Good contest for Captain's first anniversary with Late Nights with the Midnight Bomber. This is part two, or mark two. There were so many quality rights, it warranted a second episode. Now, whilst it is not a prerequisite, we do encourage you to join Late Night Poets Group on allpoetry.com. And how are you doing, Captain?
I'm splendid. Thank you for asking. How are you, Neutron?
Yeah, I'm much better. I've got a working phone now, which is always useful when you're trying to do the show.
That escaped my attention. You were off planet last week.
Yes, I was indeed. It wasn't the gremlins. It just had no reception. They sent me a brick, effectively. So that's always useful, you know, because you don't realize how connected you are to your phone until it disappears. So thankfully, I'm back up and operational.
Very glad.
And how have you been this week, Captain?
I'm busier than a one-legged man in an ass-kicking contest. Just trying to get good. I'm behind. Oh, you'd think you'd have more time when you were retired, but no. I'm behind on all my Christmas presents because I make mine.
Oh, wow.
So busy girl between that and trying to squeeze in writing and doing contests and what have you. There ought to be two of me.
Awesome. Well, it looks like it's the two amigos today at the moment. So we will start the show. And Kel actually graced us with a poem. Would you like to actually, I might read this one. We'll get you to read the next one. Playing with fire. Guys hiding in the shadows, watching all the pretty ladies walking by, adjusting their gear as they go. They got a fire down below, an uncontrollable burn, can't help but show. Stepping into the streetlights, glow-tented trousers leading them through. Got to find just the right girls to put out the fire. Oh, they know. Yeah, they know the ones with the flow, which way the wind blows, to put out this fire down below. For Rosie's delightful red palms, but Sally's a four-fingered wonder. Guys amble through the streets looking for a rare treat. They happen to know who has the sweetest blow to handle the fire below. Watching all the pretty ladies really makes it harder to control pants tightly rising to the occasion. Oh yeah, they know, the ones with the flow which way the wind blows to put out this fire down below. Old men stood where the young boys stand off the scenes under the street lamps that have a brighter gleam. Better to see as the pretty night ladies saunter and sway, knowing which lads will play along with the best paying players and panting hardest over their abundant charms on display. Oh, they know, yeah, they know, the ones with the flow, which way the wind blows to put out this fire down below. Some fellows willingly wait for the best of the best of the pretty ladies of the evening's quest. The one, the grapevine says, they can attest she's above the rest with her luscious ruby lips. She'll put on a Bowie Neal's performance attending the fire down below. Well worth the wait if you ask the gents. Oh, they know. Yeah, they know. The ones with the flow, which way the wind blows to put out this fire down below. End poem. What do you think, Captain?
I don't think she pulled any punches. I don't think she pulled anything.
Someone did.
Definitely, yes. It's definitely, I believe the word is ribald, bawdy. Yes, it's definitely bawdy. But beautifully done. I mean, it's got a nice flow to it. It's very tongue-in-cheek humor or something. I was just I said tongue-in-cheek, and I thought, why did I say that? Never mind. No, I. It's a great piece of writing, and it's clever. It is very clever. It's got some great wit to it. So I think it's a great piece of poetry.
Great comment, Captain. Yeah, Kel wrote it to the prompt for Rhythm and Rhymes show, all through the midnight, watch them come and watch them go, oh go, with only one thing in common, they got the fire down below. And I think it was just a sassy, saucy number. And that fire down below and the games we play in our youth to find someone to blow it out, I just thought it was a great answer to the chosen prompt. And I agree with you there, Captain. It was a bit tongue-in-cheek or something else, one or the other.
Oh, yeah. I didn't say that. Oh, we got sassy, saucy, and spicy here.
That's it.
It is.
That's it.
It's great piece of writing, though, and you're right. It did. I was just about to say it nailed the prompt, but I decided not to.
Oh, the double entendres are coming thick and fast, aren't they?
Oh, my God. And it reminds me of a quick story, of in my youth, you know, where you're just starting to date. And I was just in the Marine Corps. And this young lad who was actually, I was going through school, and he was an instructor, but fortunately he wasn't one of my instructors, which is a good thing, too, because the lad was drop-dead gorgeous. He played rugby, and he owned a Corvette. And he takes me out to dinner, and we're sitting here and talking, and we're talking about dating. And he says to me, he goes, I only have one rule. And I said, really? What's that? And I'm 19 years old. I said, what's that? And he goes, I can touch a lady anywhere she can touch me. I've never so careful with a man in my life.
That's hilarious.
I said, that's fair. I never forgot that. That's your only rule? Yeah, that's my only rule. Okay. I was so careful with the guy. I couldn't believe it. Oh.
That
I'm
was
sorry,
a very appropriate story.
Not up next.
All right, we've
okay.
got Zoran Wee, and if you can give this one a read, that'd be great.
Hey, a coloring book of words, groaning, sweeping up the dust. That is my empty mind. I'm scheming to be famous, full gathering in my vanity of how it's be done, with surrealist poetry, scribbled cubist lines, written in impressionist paint. Chagall can be my mentor, painting, leaking, Canaletto's Venice simply drained with gondolas on wheels, while Picasso with the cubes, his facets will make diamonds from my vanity of words. Monet tints my pages with Giverny, shades of blue, turning lines to water lilies, as only he could do. Am I writing art, making pictures of my mind, coloring book of words that can paint for me? We see all the color of our words. That's in his author's note. And poem.
Thanks, Captain. That was a great read. I actually don't know how to pronounce the word Giverny, is it? Be interested to know what that is. But I thought it was such an interesting write, and it speaks to me of how words and paintings coexist, and they coalesce as mutual inspiration, art creating art. And at times like these, I wish I had a greater appreciation of art history so I could truly appreciate the poem. But the part I identified with most was wool gathering in my vanity of how it's to be done, with surrealist poetry, scribbled cubist lines written in impressionist paint. And it looks like we may have a caller.
Yeah.
So I'll just bring them on.
And there you go, a little factoid on Giverny.
Is that Martha?
Yes, it is.
Oh,
hi, Martha. Great to hear you. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
Yeah, good. I think this is the first time I've heard you on the program, at least while I'm on.
I don't think I've been on your program. I've been on some others.
That's awesome.
That's the first time you've joined us, Jerilyn. First time you've joined us.
And did you get a chance to listen to the poem?
No, I missed that one.
That's all right. I will get your poem up next if you like. And I'll get Captain just to make a comment on Goronwy's first, and then I'll get your poem up next.
Okay.
And when you're ready, Captain.
I'm not on mute. I just want to make sure. I think Coloring Book of Words is a great title, because actually, when we think about it, we do paint word pictures, word paintings, and he's talking about Impressionists. So he's listed Impressionists and lists in here. Monet, and by the way, if you look at the board, Giverny was the garden, Monet's garden, where he painted a lot of his paintings. So I put that up on the board. It talks about all the different shades that they do with paints and that we do with words. So I think it's a very apt parallel.
I was on mute. The mute monster got me.
Hi, hello.
So Martha, I put your poem up. So when you're ready, I was very impressed with this, by the way.
Thank you. Okay.
And
The Angry at the Sun by Martha Gettle. Be angry at the sun for setting, mourn all that you're not getting. For life is but a merry-go-round. We all go up and down. What we did yesterday, we still have to do today. Be angry at the sun for setting. Keep track of all you're regretting. It is all just a race that we run. There's nothing new under the sun. Be angry at the sun for setting. So much there is no forgetting. Memories haunt us day and night. Their pull we can't seem to fight. Be angry at the sun for setting. So much that comes in life is upsetting. For death, when it comes to call, is the biggest upset of all. Be angry at the sun for setting. But if we fill our life with regretting, we'll miss the beautiful sunrise, it's true. Be thankful and rejoice in what's been given you.
Thank you, Martha. I wonder if you would be able to put the link on the board. I had a different poem for you up, but that was just lovely. Very sentimental and heartfelt.
Oh.
That's all right.
I'm sorry. I thought that was
that's
the one.
Okay. That's all right. I was really impressed with the emotion that was behind that. It sounded like it was a difficult write. And, Captain, what were your thoughts?
I loved it. I loved it. It was interesting to hear you read a piece as opposed to singing.
Oh, yeah, that's what I've been waiting for.
That's all right. I like them both. But is the one you read to us at the sun setting, or is that a different one? Because I'm looking for the link on your page.
I just put it on the...
Outstanding. Thank you, darling.
On Late Poets. Late Night Poets. I just put it there.
Thank you,
okay.
Martha.
I was mistaken as to which one it was supposed to be tonight.
Don't worry about it. We get confused, too. It's our show. Now, I liked the piece that you just read. I think it has a great... It's very philosophical and deeply so. Because it talks about you enjoying life and not looking to what you haven't got, but being grateful for what you have got, which so many of us often play what if and ignore the things that we do have that are wonderful. So I think it's a great piece. I like your homespun wisdom. I like your philosophy. Your pieces are always full of wisdom, and I really enjoy that.
you.
Thank you, Martha. I love the picture as well. It's such a lovely picture to go with the poem. I think it really suits it. I think my favorite part was be angry at the sun for setting so much that comes in life is upsetting. For death, when it comes to call, is the biggest upset of all. Very true. I just recently went past my losing my mate's first anniversary. And, yeah, it's still raw. And I think this was a poignant poem to play. Yeah. And, Martha, are you going to hang around for a bit or do you need to go? It's up to you.
Oh, I can hang around for a while.
Hey.
Awesome. That's great.
It is.
All right. So I will bring up the next poem, and here we go. We've got one here, and I might give this one a read. It's called She Makes Me See Music by Forgotten Dream. My melodic fingertips trace the curving outline of her body, legs wrapping around rounded hips, pulling her softly against me like a cello. Ebony locks cascade down her pale back like musical notation dancing across smooth pages, her head nestling in the heated nook between my cheek and shoulder. I dip my chin, gazing into her blossoming flax eyes that stretch like periwinkle fields, blushing lips meet in a juicy kiss, sweet like ripened plums dribbling down sticky necks. My slender arms snake around humid hourglass waist as her diamante nails glisten on my forearms like tiny treasures. Ivy limbs twisting and clinging, we crush chest like a physics principle, seeking to occupy soul nucleus in the same instant. Together, we harmonize, decoding tangled formulae, filling the missing pieces and composing our magnum opus and poem. And, Captain, would you like to start the comment?
Right. This is interesting, the metaphors. We've got music in here. We've got science. And you'd think that that would be kind of an odd combination. But the way it's nested in here, it's beautifully done. It's a very sensual piece, very subtly sensual. The visual imagery is quite vivid. It's a lovely piece of writing. I enjoyed it.
And Martha, what were your thoughts?
Well, that was a wonderful example of comparing making love to music. It's flowing and beautiful. I thought it was a wonderful poem.
Thank you, Martha. I thought it was really clever the way that that Forgotten Dream actually incorporated words from a word bank contest into the poem and made it flow quite seamlessly from one stanza to the next. And it had this nuance to the sensuality. I think my favorite stanza was, I dip my chin, gazing into her blossoming flax eyes that stretch like periwinkle fields, blushing lips meet in a juicy kiss, sweet like ripened plums dripping down sticky necks. It was a very steamy stanza, hinting at an alluringly enticing tryst, and it was very well done. And I will bring the next poem up. We have some sound clouds shortly, which I'll bring up as well. And but for now, I'll get Captain to read the next one by Diane D. Captain, are you on mute by any chance?
That was brilliant too, damn it. Well, sure, this is by Diane D. This looks like something that Pam would put up. and her cows. Cowbells Ring, Are You Listening by Diane D. Stepping out to embrace the crowd of his swagger, he's ever so proud. He's looking shady in his three-piece suit, in his breast pocket an onion root. Groomed and primped, looking fine, arrogant, with half a glass of wine. Suave is he when he begins to moo. Thankfully, he's only charmed a few. His speech was strong, he delivered. A nation's voice was not considered. As he shoved his snout into the air, of all his followers began to cheer. Despite his ego, he served 4 years. After that, they screamed their fears. He destroyed a country one by one, a grown-up child who was having fun. They said stupid is as stupid does, but 4 years of crime is what it was. He yelled often that he's no chump. His own undoing was Donald Trump.
I love it.
Oh, my God, I didn't see that coming.
Oh, that's good. Oh, that is so good.
That is hilarious.
Yeah, I love it.
I do, too. Oh, my gosh, that is so, this is so damn clever.
So apropos.
But you know what? This is subtle. You know what this reminds me of? This is the subtle kind of political rhyme, the political humor that that all of your nursery rhymes come from. I mean, this is all of your nursery rhymes. If you think about it, you know, London Bridges Hunter Garden Grove. Yeah. Georgie Porgy, Puddin' in Pie, Kiss the Girls and Made Them Cry. That was all political humor, and this is in that same vein, and it uses an animal as the antagonist, and I think this is damned clever.
Gorgeous.
Martha, were your thoughts?
Oh, I love it. I mean, I couldn't figure out where it was going, and I was thinking, man, how am I going to come out on this? I don't understand a bit of it. When she got to the end, it was just perfect. It was great. I just love it completely.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It's brilliant.
You know, the funny thing is, I don't normally play overly political pieces on my show, but there was such nuance in it. It was the tongue-in-cheek humor and great metaphor for the 4 years of tyranny under Trump. And as you said, Captain, it was delivered with that interesting rhyming scheme. And the fun also belied a deeper meaning. And I think delivery is everything, and you did well with the reading, Captain. And look, I don't expect this to polarize our listeners because they already know where we stand, I think, by now. But I do think it would be polarizing to some. But really, elegantly put at the end, his own undoing was Donald Trump. Just so well done.
There are some people who would take offense to singing Happy Birthday.
Oh, God. I have a little surprise for you, Captain. It's up now. It's only a little surprise. But it's a SoundCloud that I think you'll appreciate. So I'll play it now.
Okay. It's not that easy being green. Having to spend each day the color of the leaves. When I think it could be nicer being red. Or yellow or gold or something much more colorful like that. It's not that easy being green. It seems you blend in with so many other ordinary things. And people tend to pass you over because you're not standing out like flashy sparkles in the water or stars in the sky. but green's the color of spring. And green can be cool and friendly like. And green could be big like an ocean, or important like a mountain, or tall like a tree. When green is all there is to be, it could make you wonder why, but why wonder, why wonder? I'm green, and it'll do fine, and it's beautiful, and I think it's what I want to be.
I thought it was perfect timing after that read. I thought, I'm going to just slip that in and just... Oh, man. Today's been a funny episode, actually, I think. At least the technical difficulties are at a minimum at the moment. That's good. Apart from our mute monitor.
Yeah. Don't tempt them.
And Martha, would you be able to read Raylan's poem, A Slice of Watermelon?
Sure. A Slice of Watermelon by Raylan. We break bread in the morning. We break pencils every afternoon. We break through binding of our books. But if someone had said we'd break just as easy as watermelon is sliced at a picnic in August, I would never have woke. One day in the garden of our pages, I couldn't breathe. Young palms dreaming of green grass, a new yellow sun. You like the still blue. Now my broke heart lights with ink. Alive, fingertips black, fresh thumbs. Sometimes hands that reach out a window, kissing blue skies. Tim Corn.
Thank you, Martha. And Captain, would you like to start the comments for the poem?
I will, but I don't know where to start. Not sure where this is going. I thought I did at the first two stanzas, but I'm not sure where it ended up. But I wasn't with it when it went, when it ended. I like the beginning. I mean, it has... We break bread in the morning, break pencils in the afternoon. We break through the bindings of our books. If someone had said we break just as easily as watermelon is sliced, I never would have woke. And I'm thinking to myself, where is this going? Because it sounds like it's going to talk about mortality. You like the still blue? Says I couldn't breathe, and I thought you like the still blue. If she's not breathing, then she's blue. And now my broken heart, maybe the heart's blue. I'm not sure. It lost me right around the third stanza.
For me, Captain, I just got the sense of melancholy in the right, and it was almost young love ripped away by happenstance. Nurtured in the full bloom of the season, you get the feeling that it is brittle, like the branches reaching to the still blue. For me, my favorite part was one day in the garden of our pages, I couldn't breathe. Young palms dreaming of green grass, the new yellow sun, you like the still blue. The only thing I can think potentially is that it's talking about almost a whimsical, frivolous love. How we had that discussion the other day, or it was a couple of weeks now, about the she loves me, she loves me not flowers.
Oh, yes, yes.
There was that poem. That's kind of the feeling I get from this one. There were so many metaphors in the poem. I think sometimes it's easy to get lost in the overall direction. But I think he's got a broken heart because he's lost love, but it seems like a very young love. And If you go down Writes with Ink, Alive, Fingertips, Black, Fresh Thumbs, Sometimes, Hands That Reach Out a Window, Kissing Blue Sky. And I think maybe he's reminiscing about that young world. That's my take on it anyway.
It sounds like you got more out of it than I did. I wish I could appreciate it.
And Martha, what are your thoughts?
Well, I thought it was very colorful. The imagery was good. But as far as actually following the meaning of the poem, I couldn't quite make it out.
It was very abstract, I think. And
yeah.
I think abstract generally is open to interpretation, or it just gets lost in interpretation. There's two schools of thought on that one. But we'll jump on to the next poem. I think I've actually got a SoundCloud I'll bring up. So, yes, I think I do. I'll hit enter on the poem and find the... there we are. All right, I'll hit play. Just a reminder to put yourself on mute when you're not talking. It seems to be a little bit of a interference today on the line. All right, here we go.
Feathered family heirlooms. Family heirloom nestles. Feathered pestle abides in mortar. Wisdom's divination rod ever close by, cheek to cheek, precious progeny protected. 119 years and counting, white feathered owl pestles still dwell close to mortal mortars. Century old blue gum saw surround sweeps the horizon where the owls dwell. Marbleized bark peels from Herculean trunks. Languid tree limbs walk, talk, and stalk when lightning streaks. Renee not from Thor's hammer. Upon southern soil, Danish settler planted sentinels. Down under seeds sprouted on South African soil. Toil broil under harsh summer sun into winter's hoar frost. Epicenter stone walls rose Jericho determined. Jackal cajoled as milkshed barn rose. Cheek to cheek, mischievous meerkat tweeted. What infidel upsets our apple cart? Poet sundials a smile. Little lad cad was terrified, electrified with each late afternoon shed visit. Golden rays slid, pulverized red dust. Third generation progeny trod lightly. Family heirlooms nestles in vast blue gums. Feathered pestles greeted seventh mortar boy child. Wisdom's divination rods wanted to be close by, cheek to cheek. Protect Danish settlers' precious progeny. Electrified, terrified, with the first cordial megaphone, ooh, holler, little wobbly legs with Pac-Man eat up red earth, charge back towards the homestead, ooh, ooh, wait, wisdom's divination rod call surround followed. Little bandy-legged blighters become young guns, mature to prodigal son, set out and sail the seven seas. Exploration of ribald waters on foreign shores. yet, ever, always, no longer electrified, terrified by fear, but smitten in awe and admiration, feathered family owl heirlooms traveled with, presented themselves on different continents. Wisdom's divination rods ever close by, cheek to cheek, whenever Danish settlers precious progeny sought guidance. End poem.
Thank you, Eric, for the SoundCloud. I think it was a really interesting tale that was crafted from the art prompt that was at the top of the poem there. Now, I really enjoyed the trip through the generations. There was a vulnerability and also a strength, and owls are truly remarkable animals. And I feel that Eric captured that in his densely laden right. Little bandy legged blighters become young guns, mature to prodigal son, set out and sail the seven seas, exploration of ribald waters on foreign shores, yet ever always no longer electrified, terrified by fear. It's almost got this coming of age feel to it, for both the owl and the progeny, set in the backdrop of the Danish settlers. Captain, what were your thoughts?
You know, I marvel at the story that he has woven from this beautiful piece of art. This was there were a lot of birds in his artwork, but I selected one that was quite exceptional. I thought that it would the owl because of the symbology surely would provoke something, and it certainly did. This is wonderful storytelling. It's got a generational feel to it, and threaded through the entire different generations is this owl. The symbol, of course, being of wisdom and longevity. And I also like that last stanza, the little banty-legged blighters become young guns. He's got some wonderful alliteration in this and some very vivid imagery. So the metaphors are just so beautifully constructed. It's a very layered piece, very dense. There's a lot to it. It's one of those pieces that, again, you need to sit down and read several times and even read it aloud to yourself to really, really grasp all the intricacies of it.
Agreed. And Martha, I'll get you to comment about the poem, and then I actually want you to read your owl poem, because I think it was written to the same prompt, and I think it'd be interesting to see them side by side. Martha, are you on mute by any chance?
Yes.
All right.
I thought this was a really good poem of how family heirlooms travel down through the generations and their treasures all the way through.
Great comment, Martha. And would you be able to read the snowy owl? I put it on the board for you.
Sure, just a second. Let me get back to it. Yeah, I really like this poem. The Snowy Owl by Martha Gettle. Annie and I fell in love a long, long time ago, and Annie's love filled my heart and soul. But our love was too great, you see. It left others envying her and me. There was an evil witch in the town. Determined to her, I would be bound. But I told her I would never go with her. Really pissed her off, that's for sure. Then she cast an evil spell on me, determined that I never would be free. She trapped me as an owl for all my life, until I agreed to make her my wife. But my love came looking for me, And if this is as close as we can ever be, I'll stay just as close to her as I can, for I'm an owl and not a man. Yes, our love still lives just the same, though we are stuck in the witch's game. I love her, and I always will, though I'm an owl, I love her still. But the witch, she found out at last that I was still tied to my past. She determined she would bring an end to all that stopped me from heeding her call. So she cast a spell that night, an evil-powered spell of fire and might. And the house my love was sleeping in became a funeral pyre of death and sin. Stood and laughed through it all. She thought at last that to her arms I'd fall. But I had eyes only for my love. If she died, I'd follow her above. So I flew over to the raging fire. I could see my love in her funeral pyre. I flew toward her and rested near. So in love I felt no pain nor fear. She reached out, touched me again, and I felt a rippling through her skin. And suddenly, so quickly, I did not even see. There was a beautiful snowy owl like me. And we rose high up into the sky. We saw the witch staring as we flew by. This may not be what we were hoping for, but Annie and I will be together forevermore. End poem.
Great read, Martha. I really enjoyed where you took the prompt with this one. The rhyme, which I just from my earlier readings of your work, is to be expected and done well, I might add. And the witch's spell, the unexpected twist at the end whereby the two lovers are transformed into owls and escape the funeral pyre. And it reminds me of the scene from The Labyrinth, where the baby is taken away and the goblin prince turns into an owl and flies away. Similar kind of story, only it's the opposite protagonist getting turned into an owl. But the freedom in flight to live and love away from the watchful, malicious eye of the witch's oppression was really great. And, Captain, what were your thoughts?
Well, I really enjoyed the couplet format from a technical point of view. From the poetry, I love the storytelling. I thought I was going to have a sad ending. Oh, no, and I was getting myself all steeled for sad ending. But I love the way you ended it. I really do. You kind of flipped it around on its head and turned them both into owls. So I thought that was just beautiful. And But it has almost a fairy tale type of ring to it. I loved fairy tales when I was a kid. I read them constantly, and I don't know why we let our kids read fairy tales, because they're terrifying. this is beautiful, and like it reminded you of the Labyrinth. This reminded me of the film Lady Hawk, the two lovers are separated. She's a hawk during the day, and he's a wolf at night. And it takes a solar eclipse before they can be together. That they had a spell each on the other. It's I really like your storytelling in this, Martha. It's a very nice piece.
Yeah, I really liked it too. I thought it turned out really good.
Good.
And on that note, we will move on to the next poem. I wonder if, Captain, you might want to put a right on the board just in case we need it. We're chugging through these rights at an immense speed, and I'll do the same. I'm just going to play a SoundCloud now by LOL, and wait me a moment.
Friends, foe, kith and kin. A poem by Lowell. Piano old and past its prime, abandoned in the barn. Spiders play the ivory keys while others spin their yarn. The mice have taken shelter there inside its wooden case. They make their nests quite hurriedly at such a frantic pace. Tonight the wind is whistling. A chill is on the air. Freezing snow begins to blow, alarming all those there. Till Mr. Pig and Mrs. Pig appear with all their brood, this playful litter, plump and bright, will surely change the mood. They nestle close, they squeeze in tight, as one by one they sit beneath the frame of what remains, and somehow they all fit. Then mice on keys begin to play a soft, enchanting sound that drifts into the open space beyond and all around. Outside the barn, and unaware, a fox lay in the snow. His eyes are closed, his heart is weak, his breathing very low. He gently stirs and longs for home, when suddenly he hears warm melodies of song and cheer through ice-cold frozen ears. And all across this icy land run rabbits, sheep and more. Piano playing in the snow is somewhat of a draw. On reaching Fox, they gather up and shout, "Please let us in." Then one by one, they snuggle up as friends, folk, kith and kin. End poem.
I thought that was another tale that could have easily been put into a children's book, in my opinion. And that it has a wholesomeness that is rarely entered into my contest. And the cadence, meter and rhyme made it a pleasure to read and to listen to. And I think it suited the poem stylistically, which I think a lot of the rhyme has tonight, to be honest. It's stylistically suited the poems that and the prompts that they've been targeting. And I think in times of strife, folk, kith and kin have been known to come together. And it's a great metaphor for humankind to emulate, if only it were our reality currently. Very well done. And what did you think, Martha?
I thought it was beautiful. I love the picture it painted of everything getting along and doing things together, and it was just a wonderful, I don't know, it was just a, I just love the way it made you feel when it was over with.
Yeah, I agree. It's a lovely poem, and I very rarely, very, very rarely get to say that on my program. Usually it's all dark and doom and gloom, so which I enjoy too, but it's nice and refreshing to have the light come out behind the clouds. And Captain, what were your thoughts?
Oh, I agree with you. This is definitely a material for a children's book and illustrations, and I can see it. The assonance in this is beautifully done. I like the and by the way, she's got a beautiful reading voice. I like that they nestle close, they squeeze in tight, as one by one they sit beneath the frame of what remains, and somehow they all fit. I for some reason, that couplet, I really love it. It has a rhythm, and then the mice begin, keys begin to play a soft, enchanting sound that drifts into the open space beyond and all around. I love that stanza. It conjures such wonderful visual imagery. And then all the animals hear, and they join all in together. Just a wonderful tale. Great children's piece. You've got to admit, our subject matter doesn't this kind of lovely, light, frothy verse. We're talking about social media, but this is a great piece. I really enjoyed this.
Excellent comment, Captain. And I think I'll give the next one a read. It's by Kay Crown. And I'll just jump back onto the page. Where are you? There we are. Okay, so it's called Clearing the Cobwebs. The sandstorms of indecision fling me away from the clarity I so yearn for as I wade through endless choices while streaks of discomfort zigzag up and down the windows of my heart through the loose ends of all the unfinished business floating through my head. And now the gloating guilt has a heyday as it leaps into the driver's seat and speeds off in glee down the road that was once paved with good intentions. Eventually, the guilt crashes into a dead end as I watch prisms of light dance across the walls in the rooms of my mind. It is then that I discover that to err is to be human as imperfection beams at me from a distance. End poem. And I might add, the rest of the show is actually poems that I that Captain has hand-selected and they're on her profile. And I did some investigation. And, we've got a big storm happening here in Sydney. so I thought for your anniversary show, I would just try and make it all about you. And all about the writers you enjoy, and so that was one of the poems that was on your recommended list.
Yeah, I looked at it and I went, wait a minute, I don't see it in any of like. I said I don't see any of our contests up there, but then I see it as one of my. I have two lists: of one of romantic and the other of just general flotsam. And I see that you harvested from my flotsam list.
That's all right. I just really enjoyed the message of this poem. And sometimes it's very hard to stay focused with a monkey on your back. And the use of the personification of the emotions was great. And I think the language was accessible. And the flow of the poem from one stanza to the next was superb. And I found it really relatable, as I'm sure other listeners will. And I think the stanza that resonated most was, the sandstorms of indecision fling me away from the clarity I so yearn for as I wade through endless choices while streaks of discomfort zigzag up and down the windows of my heart. It was great riffing with the prompt. And what a prompt that was. It was What the Window Washers Did by Margaret Huss. Martha, what were your thoughts?
I thought it was a great poem on the uselessness of guilt, of feeling guilty for things that you have no control over, that it's better to just wash it away and go forward with your day.
Damn straight, Martha. That's the crux of it, really, isn't it? There's no point dwelling on things you can't change. Yep. And Captain, what were your thoughts?
I remember this piece. I enjoyed, like you said, the first stanza just captured me, and it is good storytelling, but it's also good philosophy. I flicked through the loose ends of all the unfinished business floating through my head, and now the gloating guilt has a heyday as it leaps into the driver's seat and speeds off in glee down the road that was once paved with good intentions. It is so cleverly done that eventually the guilt crashes into a dead end. And like Martha says, it is wasted effort, wasted time, and as I put it, an exercise in futility to allow yourself to be hobbled by guilt. It is just revisiting the past, and as my one brevity says, I don't live there anymore.
Good way to put it.
Mm-hmm. That's a very good way to put it, yeah. And Martha, would you be able to read Asama Chiba's poem, Hidden Treasures?
Yep, just give me a second to get back over there. Okay.
That's okay.
Where is, I don't see it.
You might need to refresh the screen. Sometimes it doesn't pop up properly.
Do that here. Okay, Hidden Treasures. Hidden Treasures by Asima Chiba. Everyone is... My computer's acting up. Everyone is a hidden treasure. Everyone wants to be known, to be heard beyond eternal silence. Only the brave can make it through the storms. Even the violent wind does not last forever. Things end, and what remains are only words that travel beyond the passage of time, recreating the reflection of who we are and what we were, revealing the blazing light we behold within our hearts, return to the root of the root of oneself. Simple.
Excellent read, Martha. And Captain, did you want to start the comments for this poem?
Certainly. I just started following Asima, and we exchanged some texts earlier this week. And she had written about love and samsara, which is the cycle of life. And I noticed that her poetry it reflects the Eastern faith. And I'm always fascinated by the Eastern disciplines. And this piece I really like because as the first stanza, everyone is a hidden treasure. Everyone wants to be known, to be heard before eternal silence. And the whole piece is very simply worded, but it has a very elegant and profound wisdom to it. Things end, and what remains are only the words that travel beyond the passages of time. And we all want to make our impression and be revealing the blazing light we behold within our hearts, the root of oneself. I really enjoy her writing. The philosophy is there. It's not an in-your-face philosophy, but there's a reverence to life and to spiritualism. And I really enjoy this piece.
Excellent comment, Captain. And Martha, you gave it a read. What did you think?
The stanza that spoke to me was, only the brave can make it through the storms. Even the violent wind does not last forever. And that made me think of me after I lost my husband. And I would say over and over again, time doesn't heal anything. There's nothing getting any better. And then all of a sudden, I realized that things were getting better, that that violent wind does not last forever, that it calms eventually.
Great comment.
I'm very sorry for
great
your loss. And a very good comment. I think it was like it's very difficult getting over the loss of a loved one. As I said earlier, not my husband, but my best mate passed away about a year ago. And I think what you said is spot on. It feels like nothing is getting better for a very long time. And it's just so incremental that you don't even notice it until you find yourself smiling at something insignificant even. And I think it was almost a heartfelt homage to returning to yourself. And the part that spoke to me was revealing the blazing light we behold within our hearts, return to the root of oneself. And I don't know, for me at least, it's so easy in modern life to get caught up in the externalities and to always seek to find that which will fill your cup. But eventually, especially in the midst of a pandemic and rolling lockdowns, one must look within And I just thought it was a really staged, thought-provoking ride. And great comments all round tonight, ladies.
Thank you.
And
I was just going to say, I've heard it said that the hurt doesn't go away. It just becomes easier to live with.
I think it's just finally accepting it. We fight it at first, and that fight only makes it harder. It's not until we really accept that we have to accept it, whether we want to or not, that we can heal.
That's so well said. And Captain, would you give the next one a read by June Johnson?
Certainly. Oops. Okay. I Came Back to Settle My Affairs by June Johnson. 1. At Grandma's, sitting on the porch, she'd tell me about the old country, husking corn, teaching me to knit. I made a hat for her terrier. 2. Dragonflies landing on our hands, spending summers there when my parents got divorced. She made it all smell like mowed grass, putting buttercups under my chin. 3. Her home sold when she had a stroke, dying at the nursing home when I was at work, reaching for my hand when I got there. They had removed her false teeth. 4. The new owners, 2 engineers with no children, painted the house white, like meth. The porch, no rocking chairs or flower baskets. 5. Hearing the voice of the willow calling me back today, I am a trespasser. 9 months left to live. Her field I know like Braille. 6. It's a long stroll from the house to the river, past the apple trees and the giant oak that let me carve initials into its bark when I was in love. JJ and RK forever. 7. Sitting on the same rock on the riverbank where I had pigtails, I have been remembered. A heron puts a daisy in my graying hair. The willow whispers Grandma's last word. 8. The earth, a forgiving priestess. In a winter, I'll be a tulip bulb, buried under her snow, waiting to bloom in the spring. Until then, I will be a trespasser, a blanket under the stars. End poem.
Excellent read there, Captain. And thank you, June, for the poem. And Martha, what were your thoughts?
That's a deeply moving, beautiful poem. It's a tribute to her grandmother and her way of life and the way she got her through her difficulties and was always there for her. It's just the kind of grandmother that we all want to be to our grandchildren, so that when we go, they'll have that kind of memories of us.
Well said, Martha. And Captain, what were your thoughts?
I'm reading my comment here, and what I said at the bottom of this, I said exquisite. Utterly, absolutely, and unquestionably exquisite. To say more would be extraneous.
Well said. I think there's just such a reverential tone in this homage to her grandmother's life, and that really hit home. It's sad how times change, and with it, the passing of loved ones that help shape our lives, but such is the way of human life. And I think my favorite part was sitting on the same rock on the riverbank when I had pigtails. I've remembered a heron puts a daisy in my graying hair, the willow whispers Grandma's last word. And I think June has captured a moment in her poetry, and she does this quite a lot in her poetry, and it resonates really deeply. It cuts deep, particularly the line referring to the house being painted white like math. Just the thought that you can't take your belongings with you, right? But the thing is, like, how quickly those memories fade when someone else takes over the house, so to speak. The new owners, two engineers with no children, painted the house white like math, the porch, no rocking chairs or flower baskets. It's just, I think that was the most depressing part of the poem. It just had that sense of melancholy to it as well. Yeah.
And you know, I'm glad you pointed that out, because you just reminded me of something that happened recently. I had a dream about my grandmother and my grandmother's house, and forgetting that the technology will allow you to do things that it never let you do before. I remember my grandmother's address, so I pulled up her address on Google, and I went looking at real estate listings, and lo and behold, I found the picture of my grandmother's house, and I should never have done that. It looked nothing like what I remembered. They had put siding on where it used to have shingles on the sides. The old it was a bungalow in Chicago, and the flower garden that she used to have in front of her house was that she would tend so lovingly was all gone. But there in the foreground was this little piece of sidewalk that I remember each time I got out of my mother's car, running up that little tiny piece of sidewalk, and I loved it because it was just my size. And I saw that, and I started to weep because I remembered all the times that I ran up that sidewalk. And it does tear at your heart.
Yeah, I can imagine that. Yeah, that's a really touching story, Captain. I don't have much to say to that, but
it's better to just have the memories and not try and go. Which poet said you can never go home again? Because it's the truth. You can't. You can't go back to the memories because it's never the same.
Yeah. Oh, we're in the midst of an electrical storm here in Sydney, so so far so good. I'm still on the line. So that's good. And next we've got a poem by Thomas B. Good old Tom. And I might get you to read this one, Captain, because he suits your voice, I think.
We share the same area code too.
Exactly. You should tell it. You should walk down the road and tell him to get on the phone.
Literally about 45 minutes from here. I know where he lives. We keep threatening to meet each other for coffee, but it's never going to happen.
Yes.
Mud Dance by Thomas B. The sea susurrates between my toes. Sand crabs race the last trace of briny lace. I listen. Feel you between my fingers. Wet sand runs back to the sea. Taste the last salty night. You slip away, half dreamed, half hoped, all woman, rich in the steamy act of creation. This land awash, magnificent, a tremble, brown colors, steel contour. Mudmen storm dreams, hide in war and draw strength from hate. Woman, sensual complete, caught in the rhythms, pulse of the forever dance. Need, want, met by love, lust, and the fires of the open flesh seduces the last past mind. Spirit set free, sings from the mountains. Mudman finds his rock, rolls it across the ground, luxuriates in his senses, being set fire by grasses. The ever-calling love of song, vegetation, and dirt. He discovers a hole, a place for his rock, and so finds peace. The songs of love need more than mud. They need a man to bring his spirit and tender strength, savor the feast. Then woman set free lets the passion of her rivers race counterpoint to her love songs. Rhythms syncopate. Passions build on passion. Graduations of togetherness increase, build to a singular passion. Salty flavors linger in my throat. My princess spins upon her toes, and fingers trace the line of chin and lips, draws me into the dance upon this earth, this sandy shore. I am washed by the river's course, every cell unscarred deals. New colors, peacock fan spread about this man. Born on the edge of skin and sky, I can only feed her gold, gleaned from the edge of sun-frosted clouds. Pray she joins me where the land quivers, settles against the sea, be washed into me. End poem.
Great read, Captain. And Martha, what were your thoughts on the poem?
I thought it was wonderful. He took something like mud and turned it into something so beautiful all the way through. It was just amazing. I really loved it.
Yeah. It is a great poem. And you know what? On second read, I don't know if I've got the name right, but in Jewish folklore, is it Golem?
Golem.
Captain, you might know. Is it Golem? It's made from mud or clay.
It's made out of mud.
Yeah. And then he crafts a lover, or someone crafts him a lover. And you almost get that sense to it. Sensual, grounded poem. And it flowed so beautifully. And I can see why Captain saved this one to her list. And you know what, just a bit of fun fact, this was written 15 years ago, and it still has Tom's trademark on it, and and a strength in its unity of the souls within. And there's almost a gentle spirituality to this sensual rite, and I was quite inspired after reading it. And Tom actually got back to me, and he said, a friend of mine who later became head of the Louis Armstrong Archival Library, and with whom I did poetry and jazz, he did the jazz and I did the poetry, told me that all my poetry was spiritual at its heart, and he saw far more into my stuff than I did. His jazz made me very conscious of my lyricism. I found myself hearing far more of the way this language sings and rings. This poem is a fine example of all of this. Good to hear you enjoyed. So, Captain, what were your thoughts?
I wholeheartedly agree with that comment. There is an innate spiritualism to all of Tom's work. He does not merely assemble words. He doesn't just push nouns against verbs. Actually, you can feel a thread of emotionality through everything he writes. You can feel a little bit of himself invested and left behind in everything. And I really respect that in his work. This piece I find interesting because it starts with the man being very elemental. Mudmen storm dreams, hide in war, and draw strength from hate. And it elevates woman on a different plane, sensual, complete, caught in rhythms, pulses that forever dance, need, want, met by love. It has man as very elemental, and woman as very spiritual. And it later in the piece, when man joins with woman, then realizes spiritual. And it's most like it puts woman on a different ethereal plane. And it basically says that without woman, man is simply elemental and looking for a place to put his rock. But with woman, he is able to find you.
Great comment, Captain. And Martha, if you refresh your screen, I'll get you to read Baby's Breath by figuring it all out.
Okay. Baby's Breath by Figuring It All Out. Window shopping for baby's breath, pastel dinosaurs for dimple face dolls, glowing store lights perused and used as nightlights to wood lice, snuggled and bundled in pink label blankets to press my cold palm against this world. This nursery for pending love is to tumble and prance from new leaf to grief, from new leaf to grief. In poem.
Yeah, this one hit me in the guts. When I first read the first line, I thought window shopping for baby's breath, you know, it starts off quite innocent shopping for flowers, but by the end it makes you think this line was in fact literal. And I think it was a deeply personal poem, which I imagine was quite difficult to write, and it was definitely difficult to listen to. I'm sorry for the loss, and the repetition at the end really drove the grief home. Really well done. And Captain, what were your thoughts?
Very visceral light. I think the author had to summon a lot of courage to write this, because this was bringing some really raw emotion to the surface. I also thought in the first line she was talking about gypsophilia and pastel dinosaurs, then snuggled and buggled in pink label blankets to press my cold palm against this world. And that's when I started to suspect that there was more underlying this, this nursery for pending love. It is obvious that this is a deep loss, but it is such a graceful brevity that it's you're right. This is a gut punch. You read this, and this is raw emotion, and it is so gracefully expressed.
And Martha, you gave it a read. What were your thoughts?
I thought the pain and the emotion and the feeling just resonated from all of it. It just drew you in to the end, where it just kind of shocks you a little bit, because that is kind of how life is. If you get right down to it, you go from happiness to grief and then happiness to grief again and on and on.
Yeah. Very true. You know what? We started off in a happy, frivolous space, and now we're going down the rabbit hole. Let's see what we've got next. Oh, man. All right, so we've got a SoundCloud. I'm just going to look for it. Where are you? There we are. All right, I'm playing it now.
Tigress by Sapphire Rose. Penetrating emerald greens. She sent shivers coursing through your body in a euphoric rush. Underestimating her intentions is a miscalculation on your part. She is animated and accurate. Do not make that mistake. Her pearly white skin and sinful red lips are sure to leave you in a haze. A mystery that will surely stop your heart. one that stalks beyond Shadow's tomb. Entice her to your benefit, for she is sure to seal your doom if you try to counter it. Think twice before freeing her from her cage. Left for so long, she is sure to be enraged. And if you slumber next to her, secrets your body will try to hide. She will swiftly unmask each and every one in one lustful stride. Her mind a cocoon for sinful pleasures. Embrace her for the tigress she is. Treat her like a queen, and eternal bliss will reign supreme. End poem.
Excellent, SoundCloud Sapphire. And Martha, I'll get you to comment first this time.
I read that before. I commented. I thought it was a really interesting poem, and I really liked the ending of it. That was really quite good.
Yeah, she crafts one formidable lady in this poem, and I thought it was a great answer to the prompt, never mess with a courageous woman. She is not just a woman, she's a tigress. She knows how to rise above the odds, even if the world is against her. And I think never truer words were spoken. Life is but a challenge and fuel for the fire. And I think that Sapphire Rose has captured that essence in her writing, and it was quite steamy. I think my favorite part was think twice before freeing her from her cage, left for so long she's sure to be enraged.
Mm-hmm.
And if you slumber next to her, secrets your body will try to hide. She will swiftly unmask each one in one lustful stride. Oof. And Captain, what were your thoughts?
The reason I saved this one is because I like the way she embodied the prompt, and the portrait paints of a powerful woman who has no doubts about herself, and she is almost feline in her power and in her self-assuredness. And I really enjoyed the way she described her, and there's a sensuality to it, but there's also what I really appreciated was the power in her words.
Yeah, and I think that actually came through in the SoundCloud as well. It wasn't lost in translation, which was fantastic when you get to hear the actual poet read. And it's also, Martha, I get that feel when you read as well. You get the emotion that comes through it, particularly with that poem before, Baby's Breath. Yeah. And we're in the last half an hour of power. So I'll move on to the next poem. We've got Dark Night of the Soul. And this is one I've never heard of. It's an ethery. Is that how you say it, Captain?
Bring it up right now. Whoops, what do we got here? Young Lover's Ways. Dark Night of the Soul. An ethery, yeah.
That's the one. Yeah, so it's so for anyone like myself who had no idea what an ethery was, each line can only be one syllable more than the previous line until you build to the tenth. So did you want to give it a recap then?
Sure. Young lovers too eager for love's sweet taste fall like shooting stars, lost in tender trapping, an opportunity knocks, feeling tremors, thoughts uncensored, searching for meaning in fumbling lips as old lovers admire innocent ways. End poem.
Great read, Captain. And as I said before, you learn something new every day. And considering the restrictions to the format imposed by the ethery, I thought it had great flow. And
yes.
I think my favorite part was searching for meaning in fumbling lips as old lovers admire innocent ways. and it had this gentle sensuality to it. And it almost points to the friendship that builds with enduring love as well. Martha, what were your thoughts?
I thought it was really good. I thought it had a sweet kind of an innocence to it that flowed all the way through it. And it was really, really nice. I enjoyed it.
Agreed. And Captain, did you want to round out the comments for this poem?
Sure. I was very impressed. As I mentioned last night, it was a different poem. I believe it was a Bill Inell that was read. And I have a lot of respect for anyone who endeavors to create within a structure, like a sonnet, like a villanelle, like a rondo, or in this case, like an ethery, to do something like this and not, and in this case, he has got one continuous thought here. It's not broken phrases. It's not random. It is a cogent thought, which I was extremely impressed by.
I thought you were going to keep commenting, and I just—you had like an inflection in your voice, and I was like, "Shit, do I talk? Do I not talk?"
I should say, "End comment."
End comment. Oh man, today's been hilarious. So we've got another poem.
No body language.
Yeah, that's what you need is body language. You don't have that when you're doing the radio programs. That you're not looking at each other. So one can only wait momentarily and then launch into speech, I think. So I'll give this one a read. It's by Daniel Deschino, and it's called Silent Library. I can only speak for myself. But it all hits me so hard, like standing on a beach amidst an endless hurricane and my mind an empty void to absorb the wind and rain. The open windows, the senses on the temple I am, eyes widened from color and distance, ears forced open from the vibrating air, smells to permeate deep, deep within, mouth of ravenous hunger to taste the world, and touch with every brick in my temple do I feel. To contemplate a hurricane while still protecting from its wrath, hopeless task for a mind so battered. To organize and read of every volume in the library I am. Every day a myriad of new volumes to shelve. So from the beach I walk till footprints too many to count have been deep among an inland wood, unaware of the ocean beyond the healing rains of which it brings. And I shelter with the trees, and I meditate with the birds. And like a library in the darkened hours, the volumes speak. The pages for which I was searching emerge from the lost dimension where my mind does reside, and the dark, the illumination of silence. End poem. And what were your thoughts, Captain?
I really enjoy Daniel's writing. He has a very profound and layered style. His metaphors are complex, but they're not obscure. They're not abstract. It's not like trying to read Peter Solway. Peter Solway and the Gordian knot have much in common. This is a really beautiful piece. He speaks about himself as a library, and I thought that was a wonderful metaphor, because are we not? We are the sum total of all our experiences in life, and to characterize ourselves as a library is quite apt. And then he talks about leaving the beach and leaving footprints too many to count. and sheltering. And I love the last stanza, like a library in the darkened hours, the volume speaks. And it's like we lay there thinking about our lives and at night and what we've been through. And sometimes, sometimes our subconscious comes out and brings memories with it. I find that mine does that with annoying regularity. It's a great
piece. This actually, it just jogged my memory of when I was really young, probably about 7 or 8 years old, with my Enid Blyton books, before they were a bad thing, the Enid Blyton books. And reading against a nightlight, a Roadrunner nightlight, pressed the book against it just in the quiet of the night, reading in the hopes, in the vain that my parents wouldn't hear me hopping out of bed to read by this ridiculously small nightlight. And I think that metaphor, here we go, to contemplate a hurricane while still protecting from its wrath, hopeless
yes.
task for a mind so battered, and to organize and read of every volume in the library I am, every day a myriad of new volumes to shelve. And it does, it's like you do, you go through life, you shelve those books, and occasionally you go back and you read them, I really enjoyed this next stanza. So from the beach I walked till footprints too many to count have been deep among an inland wood, unaware of the ocean beyond the healing rains of which it brings. And it's got such a gentle philosophical angle to it. You know, there's a lot of sage wisdom in this, right, I think. And, yeah, I really enjoyed it. And Martha, what were your thoughts?
Well, I was thinking that it was a wonderful idea to think of yourself as a library, because we all of us have so many varied experiences and things that happen in our lives that we would all be libraries of all these different things just stored in our memory.
Great comment,
great
Martha.
Comment.
Martha, if you refresh the screen, I'll get you to read the next poem by White Tiger.
Okay. Oh, child can change. Okay. Here we go. A Child Can Shake a Shadow's Hand by White Tiger. Sew your eyes and close your mouth. Savor sounds that breathing makes, absorb the inner glow. Taste those early birthdays when candied cakes bedazzled you. Sketch a life-sized portrait of utopia. Deny a night without a moon. Purge the pride you scream inside. Curse the rain, but tell us why. Fill the blanks of canvas. Make us see all your colors. Express your feelings crystal clearly. Wonder widely. Wonder deeply. Excavate the hidden truth. Your inner child with candy. Let him out to play in puddles. Dig the holes of China. A child can shake a shadow's hand, make dragons fly and make believe, where words are born from magic seeds and blue is concrete poetry. So paint outside the lines. Speak your mind and face your fears. Brave the darkness, seek the light. Find your strength inside the tears. Articulate an emptiness. Tell us why dark matter matters. Swallow flames. Spit out the sparks. Stroke your dreams like embers. Then pull the stitches from your eyes and see where you will go. End poem.
Thank you, Martha. That was a great read. And, Captain, what were your thoughts?
This was, I remember this one from the from the Stephen Hawking contest we did, and I really enjoy this piece because it illustrates with such a child's imagination are capable of that I think adults are not, because as we become as we live forward to to sometimes to magic and to the mystery of life, and nothing is new. And that's why I enjoy a child can shake a shadow's hand, make dragons fly in make-believe, where words are born from magic seeds. In a child's mind, in a child's life, anything, in a child's world, anything is possible. So paint outside the lines, speak your mind and face your fears. Brave the darkness, seek the light. I think it's an entreaty to us to embrace the child that we still have within us and still see the world with that sense of awe and wonder.
Excellent comment, Captain. And this was written to the prompt, remember to look up at the stars and not down at your feet. Try to make sense of what you see and wonder about what makes the universe exist. Be curious. And however difficult life may seem, there is always something you can do and succeed at. It matters that you don't just give up. I think that was just such a well-done take on the prompt. And
yes,
I think that White Tiger captured that wonderment to which Stephen Hawking referred, of youth, of growing into oneself, and almost emerging from a chrysalis after a hibernation of sorts. All the better for it. And funnily enough, it reminds me of when I was, I drew a life-size almost for my, or at least a small human-sized circus tent on the bathroom wall. And suffice to say, it didn't go down too well. But I did sketch a life-size portrait of Utopia. So I really enjoyed that line as well. And I filled the blank canvases, making everyone see my colors. So, yeah, I really enjoyed this poem. What did you think, Martha?
Well, to me, it was a poem of childhood and how if a child is raised with love, they're not afraid of anything. They're willing to step out and do anything because they've never been taught fear. Children only learn to fear what we teach them to fear. So they start out with no fear until we instill it inside of them.
Well said.
Sorry, I was agreeing with you on mute.
Well said.
Yeah, I definitely agree.
Thank you.
Now, Captain, you might want to grab a poem off the board because I've got two up, and then we probably have time for one more. Okay? So I'll read this one in the meantime. It's called Wildflower, and it's by me. I saw you in the cadmium yellow wildflower dress. It billowed in the breeze as you danced unfettered through the tall grass. Seeds attach themselves to your stockings and Mary Janes. They propagate themselves in vast fields, consumed with time by passing cattle, the cycle of life and all that. I hold my gut, my now barrenless womb, and ponder whether the grass was really greener in pastures beyond my line of sight. Would you retain your unbridled nature amongst the reeds or succumb to the lake like Ophelia, ephemeral in the pallid light, drifting below the water lilies? And it was written to the prompt, unspoken words often carry the most weight.
That's a great great piece to that prompt. I really like that.
Thank you, Captain. And Martha, what were your thoughts?
I thought it was very deep. It had a lot of meaning. The propagation of the seeds carried by just about anything that comes in contact with them and the cycle of life and everything. I thought it was really deep and a wonderful poem.
Thanks, Martha. And all right, we've got one more, and then I'm going to get Captain to put one on the board. So I'll
put
this
there.
One up. Oh, you did? Okay, awesome. Hang on one second. I will. Would you be able to read? Actually, I'll Hang on
whenever
one second.
You
I'll read
like-
this one. I'm like, you know what? I've been working since 7 a.m. this morning, so my brain is like mush at the moment. So I'll give this one a read, and then, Captain, you can round out the show with your poem. All right, so it's called Never Out of Mind, and it's by Laurent Ivan. Somewhere, a pale, venal sun also rises, holding shadows of living memories. Dark, sharp, knife-edged emotions retreat, but like a tsunami, they return, bearing a crushing weight. Atlas shrugged, lifting earth sadly. We are the rarely Atlas at the stroke of death's clock. Legs tremble against the terrible burden that bleeds sorrow. Grief released in a cascade of dark foam. I roll, wave uncaring shoreline that scrapes my humanity into thin strips of damned flesh, consecrated to whatever level of hell I have not visited. Gods of light and song are silent, holding their immortal breath against a sad sunrise that prefers the dark outline of a midnight moon. Movies run backwards, flickering images in black and white, laughing like woman child who resembles her mother. Images that leave me breathless, inhabiting surreal moments that grasp for today like yesterday. She was small and pink, squalling into the bright light of birth, my tiny miracle born of love, so easily held in two hands. Now like trying to hold water that slips so readily into an expectant earth, where she waits out of pain, out of time, out of life, never out of mind. End poem.
Whew.
Man, that one's a hard read.
Oh, my goodness.
I'll bet. Yeah.
What were your thoughts, Martha?
Oh, it's hard because it brings so back so many memories as it goes through for me of the way you can feel happy one minute, and then it's like a tsunami. The grief just rolls over you and throws you to the floor again. And it really hit home with me all the way through. It was just like he was telling my story completely, and I was totally moved by it.
Yeah, I actually heard Laurent read this a while ago. I think it was 8 months ago now. And it still touches a nerve when I read it.
Oh,
powerful. Oh. Captain,
okay,
what were your thoughts?
I also remember him reading this and talking about it afterwards because it was about the death of his daughter. And I don't think there was a dry eye on the house. We had some of the audience where you could hear the women were crying. But it's just the emotion, the raw emotion in this is so beautiful, but so painful. He writes with an elegance, but a raw reality, a very visceral light. And I think it took a lot of courage to write this because it's leaving raw nerves exposed.
Great comment, Captain. And I will just jump back onto the board and grab your phone. All right.
No one was going to be like this. I had put something happier out there.
Well, it
we're
certainly was cathartic tonight.
What's that? We're all going to get off this program and split our wrists.
Yeah.
I wrote this to a contest given Irish Rose. She comes up with some of the most beautiful prompts. The contest was called The Ache. And the prompt was, I hope that if given the choice between blinding heartache and a complete and silent nothing, you will always willingly take the ache. There is no point to a life untouched by sorrow. And it's credited to Tyler Knott Gregson. And based on... to her contest, only when I'm awake. I open my eyes to a room full of light, alone in my bed yet another night, and every morning, right on cue, my mind turns promptly to thoughts of you. Surrounded by the silence of each daybreak, I only miss you when I'm awake. Independently, I start my day knowing that yours doesn't start the same way. Though plenty of mugs reside on the shelf, the whole pot of coffee I get to myself. Knowing you'll not share the meals that I make, I'll miss you, but only because I'm awake. I occupy each day with chore after chore, checking off my to-do list and keeping score, employing myself with the business of living, listening to music since the quiet's unforgiving. Toiling ceaselessly all day without a break, knowing I'll miss you since I'm awake. I wordlessly endure our separation for each day that passes on anticipation. Our together time passes quickly. Opportunities are few. Yet each time we're together, I fall more in love with you. To me, it feels so worth every risk that we take, since I'll miss you so much when I'm awake. So much closer than friends with all that we've shared, we've gone so much further than we've ever dared. We've exchanged our hearts, yours belongs to me, but we can't merge our lives, for yours isn't free. So when we're apart, I endure the heartache, considering I'll miss you only when I'm awake. Daily, my thoughts of you are the company I keep. Come night, my thoughts and I go to sleep. I'm laying here alone again in the middle of my bed, and memories of our stolen moments fill my head. My heart's caught in the balance. While I sleep, it gets a break, because I only miss you when I'm awake. End poem.
Oh, Captain, that was really touching. I think... the part that resonated the most was I wordlessly endure our separation, for each day that passes brings its own anticipation. Our together time passes quickly, opportunities are few, yet each time we're together I fall more in love with you. To me it feels so worth every risk that we take, since I'll miss you so much more when I'm awake. Oh, it's very poignant. And, it's beautiful.
Thank you.
And, Martha, what were your thoughts?
I can totally relate to this poem. When I was going through the worst of it, I used to think, I just wish I could sleep all the time because I don't miss him when I'm asleep. So I totally understand this poem.
Well, we're going to leave Martha an emotional wreck at the end of this program.
Yeah, I think we're all going to be a bit of an emotional wreck. It's been one of those episodes that's been a roller coaster. We started off with Fluffy Bunny poetry, and then we took a nosedive down the rabbit hole.
I picked a hell of a time to stop drinking.
It just shows that we all have our own heartache.
That's it. Martha.
I'll share with, since we're the only three out there. I have a special friend, and unfortunately, this is that's as close as it can get. If he's a special friend. When I saw Irish Roses contest, I started thinking about it, and I thought about, when do I miss him? And I think, I only miss him when I'm awake. And it took off from there.
That's all it takes is one line in your head sometimes.
I'm sorry?
Very true.
Yeah.
All it takes is one line.
That's all it takes is one line.
Because that's we don't have to think about it when we're asleep, but when we're awake, it's constantly on our mind, and that's what the genesis of the whole thing was.
Yeah.
Excellent poem, Captain. And Captain, we've got the social media contest up. Do we have anything else up in the making in the next couple of weeks?
We do, and I promise you by the end of the week, come hell or Australia, whichever comes first, we will have something I'm calling the Santa spinoff, because it's going to be about how Santa Claus appears in different cultures. And I'm going to lay the Sinterklaas and Father Christmas and Kris Kringle and just going to break. We'll write the book. You're going to have to write a letter to different Santa Clauses. It's going to be, they're going to have to pick their favorite incarnation and write to him.
Excellent. And, I think we're almost at the end of the episode. I'm thinking quite possibly that we might have an open poetry night before the end of the year. It usually gets quite a good response. And Martha, you're more than welcome to enter. We would love to hear from you again, by the way. Thank you for calling up and keeping us company.
Martha.
And
I'll bring the wine
next
time.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
Yeah, it was really fun.
I think we'll need it if we have another night like tonight.
Couldn't have done it without you,
Some
Martha.
Wonderful poetry.
Yes, thank you for your calling in. Thank you for your participation.
I enjoyed it a lot.
Appreciate it.
We enjoyed having you too. And on that note, it appears that we are out of time. Yeah.
Alrighty.
So take it easy, Martha, and thanks for hanging out. And Captain, thank you. And I'll speak to you all next time.
All right.
Ciao.
Bye.
All right. Bye.
Bye.